Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Tuesday, August 4th, 2026. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Police arrest a man they believe started the wildfire that burned hundreds of homes in Spokane on Saturday. Moscow Council hears progress report on new East City Park stage that will likely be built by next year. Moscow Council hears update on City Sustainable Environment Commission, and shooting at Twin Falls fast food restaurant leaves four dead over the weekend. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. The man who detectives believe started the wind-driven wildfire Saturday that destroyed hundreds of homes in Spokane made his initial court appearance in Spokane County Superior Court this afternoon. Judge Tony Hazel maintained a $1 million bond for 37-year-old Aaron Farinacci. The causes of the other two large wildfires that burned buildings in Spokane County near Spokane Saturday are still under investigation. Deputies arrested Farinacci yesterday afternoon following reports from witnesses who saw him behaving suspiciously around midday Saturday at the location where the fire started. Police also detained Farinacci Saturday and released him shortly after the fire started. According to the Spokesman Review, Sheriff's Deputy Jerry Moffitt and another deputy questioned Farinacci about witnesses who saw him along Euclid Road, and according to court documents, Farinacci replied, "The witnesses don't know the whole thing." They said Farinacci admitted walking near the railroad tracks near Euclid, but denied being in the place where the fire started. Deputy Moffitt said he searched Farinacci's fanny pack and found cigarettes, a butane lighter, and a box of Go Fire brand waterproof matches. At the time, deputies were busy evacuating people, and they released him. The fire jumped the Spokane River and raced through northwest Spokane's Indian Trails neighborhood, burning hundreds of buildings and causing the evacuation of about 60,000 people in the northwest quadrant of Spokane. Simultaneously, the Fairview Fire was burning just outside the northeast Spokane city limits, burning homes and causing more Level 3 go-now evacuations. Detective Michael Drapeau said the two deputies who briefly detained Farinacci Saturday were unaware of his possible connection to the fire. Drapeau wrote in a report, "While they were aware Farinacci had been identified as a person seen leaving the area of the fire, they were unaware Farinacci was seen leaving the area of the fire origin. While they were aware there was an active wildfire burning, they had no information as to the cause and circumstance of the fire origin." Washington State Department of Natural Resources fire investigator Mark Titus wrote in a report, "Investigators contacted a man with a similar description to Farinacci on August 11th of last year while investigating a wildfire in the Riverside Park Equestrian area. The brush fire that day caused a level 2 BSET evacuation warning in the area that was later canceled. A photo shows a man wearing a t-shirt with the words, 'Who needs luck? I have charm,' which was the same shirt Farinacci was wearing this past Saturday. Farinacci's criminal history includes a conviction for manslaughter in Mesa, Arizona. According to the Phoenix Times News, the victim in Farinacci's manslaughter case was his father. The newspaper had reported Farinacci killed him when he asked him to do the dishes. Hiking trails on Moscow Mountain are now closed due to fire danger. Bennett Lumber closed the trails on its Moscow Mountain lands to recreational use and hunting. The North Latah Highway District has closed roads on Moscow Mountain to motorized access, also due to the high fire danger. Twin Falls Police Chief Matthew Hicks has identified the perpetrator in the fast food shooting in Twin Falls that left four people dead as 24-year-old Chad Williams. Hicks said after Williams killed three people Saturday at the newly opened In-N-Out Burger fast food franchise, he died of a self-inflicted gunshot wound. Police are not releasing the identities of the three deceased people, but the Associated Press reports the manager of the In-N-Out Burger franchise said one of the dead was an employee of the fast food restaurant, which had just opened 8 days before. Seven people were injured. Hicks said an off-duty state trooper and an armed member of the public fired at the perpetrator and drove the suspect away from the scene where he killed himself. The police chief said, "We believe their actions helped drive the suspect away from the scene, preventing further casualties. We want to take a moment and commend the actions of the off-duty officer and the citizen and their heroic action to stop this incident." Two of the injured people were in critical condition, and the FBI is asking members of the public who made video or images related to Saturday's shooting to contact them.
The Latah and Whitman recovery communities offer peer support for people dealing with addiction and other behavioral health issues. Located on Main Street in both Moscow and Pullman, they have a rotating calendar of life skills and recovery support offerings and a harm reduction program that could help you save a life. Moscow also offers a 24/7 behavioral health crisis center, along with men's and women's sober housing. Most services are free or at cost.
Here's voting information for Whitman County. Mail-in and drop-off ballots for the Washington top two primary for Congress must be postmarked or placed in a ballot drop box by Tuesday, August 4th at 8 p.m. Replacement ballots are available by contacting the Whitman County Elections Office. You can drop off your ballot before Tuesday, August 4th at 8 p.m. at the following Whitman County locations. In Pullman, below the Rose Hour sign in the parking lot, 1205 North Grand Avenue. In Pullman at Southeast Paradise Street, just outside Hinrichs Trading Company. No drop-off box on the WSU campus this election. In Colfax, Whitman County Elections Office, 304 North Main Street, and the alley behind the Elections Office at 304 North Main Street. In Oaksdale, in front of the Oaksdale Library, 103 South 1st Street. In Garfield, Town of Garfield City Hall, 405 West California Street. In St. John, adjacent to the Northwest Grain Growers Office, 33 East Front Street. To check your ballot status, go to votewa.gov. Election day only from 8 a.m. till 8 p.m. Ballot boxes, replacement ballots, and accessible voting equipment are available at the Whitman County Elections Office, 304 North Main Street in Colfax. Accessible voting equipment is available Monday and Tuesday at the Whitman County Elections Office, 304 North Main Street in Colfax.
Programming on KRFP is sponsored in part by Stop Northwest Gas Expansion, an alliance committed to exposing the truth about the harms to our health and safety caused by toxic and explosive natural gas, and preventing these harms by stopping the expansion of gas supply, including increases in the gas pipeline pressure.
KRFP is also sponsored by Rembrandt Tree Care, family owned and operated since 1977. A conscientious approach to urban forestry with year-round tree service on the Palouse and surrounding areas. You can reach Rembrandt Tree Care at 509-330-0699.
Moscow Parks and Facilities Manager David Schott informed the Moscow City Council last night the city has put out a request for bids for construction of a new stage in East City Park. Schott said he expects the city council will vote on a successful bid next month. Schott said Design West Architects is finishing up design work on the stage. The new stage will cost about $781,000 and will replace the old stage that has served as a band shell for 40 years, including hosting music for Renaissance Fair and for a time for Rendezvous in the Park before Rendezvous began renting a portable stage for their midsummer concert series. City crews removed the roof of the old stage recently due to deterioration of wood beams. Schott said the new stage will be oriented towards the northwest with its back wall against the park restrooms, and the audience would generally be facing southeast.
The improvements surrounding the stage have been refined with two main things in mind. One, we needed to retain circulation through the park. And then we also needed to look at the function of a performance stage and how those two elements blend together. So this is really the lion's share of the refinements since 30% as we've gotten into the final design here. So the improvements include pathway. Existing pathway currently kind of just rips right through here. So the existing pathway will swing to the south. It'll be an asphalt. It'll go from the southeast portion of the park up to the north. Sorry, the southwest portion of the park up to the northeast of the park. And then the stage itself will have a new ring of 6-foot-wide concrete pathway that will encircle the stage. This will include a grassy area up front. There's a delay on this here. And then we have as a bid alternate a concrete dancer's plaza as well. I would like to point out one of the topics of discussion was ingress and egress, loading and unloading of vehicles. And so we are going to create a hammerhead down here where people can unload, offload, load everything they need to do and get turned around in there too, because it's pretty tight.
Council member Bryce Blankenship asked Schott about the issue of whether the dancing area in front of the stage, referred to as the Dancer's Plaza, should have more grass or more concrete.
I am curious, what are the conversations with regards to what you have labeled here as the Dancer's Plaza alternative? I know that we've received feedback that people are maybe a little wary of having concrete right out in front of the stage and would prefer grass or sod. And so I know that this is still kind of like, you know, in process of discovery and discussion, but has there been any conversation if like, what if that wasn't concrete and what if it was just grass leading directly up into the stage?
Council Blankenship, great question. And so, yeah, we've heard both sides of it. Some people want grass, some people want the Dancer's Plaza. I think this will be a good solution to capture a vast majority of our users. And so ultimately, that's the Dancer's Plaza is going to be a bid alternate. So that would be a council's decision based on a staff recommendation on whether you wanted to accept that alternate or not for the Dancer's Plaza up front there.
That was Moscow Parks and Facilities Manager David Schott. Schott said one tree in the park will need to be removed to build the stage, and the old stage will need to be removed before the construction of the new stage. The bid opening for construction is set for Tuesday, August 25th. If the council approves a contract in September, Schott said he expects construction to begin in the fall and be completed sometime in the spring of next year.
Don't touch that dial. You got it right.
We're up in the morning when it first gets light, and we do it all day. Then we're up all night so you can listen to the radio.
You got it right.
You can listen to the radio. You've got it right.
Listen, anytime you listen, everybody's on a mission, and there ain't nothing missing when you listen to the radio.
You listen to the radio.
You've got it right.
Community radio.
Listen, and you give a little listen to the radio.
Radio Free Moscow.
Fight Back Radio.
It's 90.3 on your radio dial.
Fight Back.
Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for your support. So keep on listening and listening and listening.
Fight Back.
We're still here.
Radio.
Fight
Back.
Fight
Back.
Fight
Back.
Fight
Back.
Fight
Back.
At last night's Moscow City Council meeting, City Sustainable Environment Commission Chair Steve McGeehan gave an update on the commission's activities.
That resulted in a letter of support to this council, and the support was for the existing programs, the Wisecape rebates, etc., that had worked so well, and then some of the additions that I mentioned earlier. So we supported both the old and the new, and I am pleased to say April 20th of this year, the new water conservation plan was adopted by council. So thank you for that. And Kelly, thank you for all the work on that. It was much needed and has been a great guidance document. We were also approached earlier this spring by the Citizens Climate Lobby of the Palouse with this idea of an energy efficiency and electrification fair. None of us had ever heard of it before, and so we had a lot of questions because they were asking for our support, again, in the form of a letter to send to council. The idea is really something that's been around for some other cities, but new to Moscow, and I believe new to the state of Idaho. We asked a lot of questions and came up with the intent and purpose to have one-stop shopping for homeowners, renters, business owners, et cetera, that can provide advice for energy exports from energy experts, including the Avista Energy Efficiency Team, also local builders, installers, contractors, et cetera, and information on rebates and tax credits. As a homeowner for many, many years, it does an awful lot of work on my house. Having one place to talk to people like this was invaluable. In addition to this type of interaction, there were also presentations and panel discussions on energy efficiency, renewables, and electrification. So we thought the idea was great, and so again, we provided a letter and suggested the City of Moscow jump on board as a co-sponsor, which you did. That was key for the success, and it was a success by all means. Headcount coming through the door, this was at the Latah County Fairgrounds, 300 to 400, probably higher than that. I think people lost count after a while, but this was in the fairgrounds. In addition to the posters, tables, and information booths set up, there were the panel discussions that I mentioned earlier, three of them in particular: energy efficiency, home and community solar possibilities, and also the rise of electrotech, a new term I hadn't heard before, but things like solar storage, EVs, et cetera. Very timely, and presentations made by experts in the community. It was very, very well received. 25 exhibitors, and this astounds me for a first time through for a fair like this. And so the organizers did a great job going out and knocking on doors, sending emails, et cetera. I won't go through the list, but you recognize a lot of the local businesses, and please thank them when you get a chance for them to come out on a nice day in the fairgrounds and show their wares, answer questions, et cetera. Was really a service to the community, and I hope retroactively a service back to their business, because it's a great place to get this type of information. The fair itself was very well received. The feedback was overwhelmingly positive for both the attendees and the exhibitors, with much interest in seeing the event occur again. I can tell you, talking to the event organizers, they're still catching their breath. So not next year, but they're thinking every other year might be more appropriate. It was a tremendous amount of work. Something coming up: community solar. And I like this graphic because it asks the question, and there's a lot more questions than answers. How does community solar work? We don't know. So this came again as a question or proposal almost to the SEC, and we started scratching our heads and talking about it. I won't go through any details right now because the details are few and far between. Where the SEC is on it right now is we have formed a subcommittee to research the feasibility and draft a framework that could be proposed of what a community solar project may look like. So many, many details, many, many questions. My recommendation now, stay tuned. At some point, some details will be put together into proposal, first sent to city administration, I'm assuming, and eventually it'll come to you. But an interesting idea, but a lot has to be discussed before it goes any further. One thing that is coming up, this will now be the second annual, is the Electric Transportation Fair. The last one took place last September. That was the first. We now have a second annual scheduled for next month, September 11th, at the Palouse Clearwater Environmental Institute campus. And this is a place for all things electric transport, cars, motorcycles, bikes, scooters, maybe an airplane or two, you never know. But it's a great place for people that are car dealers or transportation dealers, as well as owners of these vehicles, to come together, talk about their experiences, good and bad, answer questions, etc. And when you've got food and drinks by Hunga Dunga and Mediterranean Spice Garden, I'm there. So it should be a great event. September 11th, mark your calendars. It was very successful last year, and I anticipate the same for this year.
That was Moscow Sustainable Environment Commission Chair Steve McGeehan speaking at last night's Moscow City Council meeting. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. The Idaho Department of Environmental Quality has an air quality alert in effect through tomorrow for Layton, Nez Perce, Lewis, Idaho, and Clearwater counties because of degraded air quality due to wildfire smoke. Air quality index is forecast to be unhealthy for sensitive groups. Members of sensitive groups may experience health effects. The general public's less likely to be affected. Forecast for the Moscow-Pullman area is calling for patchy smoke tonight, otherwise clear, low 44. Wednesday, sunny, high 88, areas of smoke. Wednesday night, mostly clear, patchy smoke, low 50. Thursday, sunny, high 93, and clear skies Thursday night through Sunday, with a low 54 Thursday night, highs 92 Friday and Saturday, and 85 on Sunday, lows 54 Friday and Saturday night.